Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are talking about the concept of being already well. No matter what is going on in your life, what illnesses or challenges you might be facing, the idea that right now in this moment, you are already well. We're speaking today with Dr. Danae Jordan. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and marriage and family therapist, and over her 26 years of practice, she's worked with a varied population, including people diagnosed with schizophrenia, addictions, eating disorders, anxiety, personality disorders, the list goes on. And her clients have come from all ethnicities and socioeconomic backgrounds. Dr. Jordan is the founder of Already Well, a progressive approach to treatment that works on the premise that no matter your present circumstance, you are already well. Dr. Jordan also created and directed the adolescent treatment program at the STEPS Substance Abuse Treatment Center in California, and she's served as the director of the STEPS Eating Disorder Recovery Program and a bunch of other programs. And today she serves as mental health services director for the Exceptional Children's Foundation in the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jordan.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. So I was watching on YouTube just before the show how you were talking about schizophrenia, and you mentioned how that was your experience working with patients with schizophrenia was one of the ways that you developed Already Well. So can you tell us a little bit about how this program came about and what it is?
Sure. After having been a psychologist for so many years, and worked with so many different populations, it occurred to me that we didn't get much better when we were always focused on looking for what was wrong. And schizophrenia was a perfect example, because working with people with schizophrenia, the focus, at least in the medical field, seemed to be to alleviate symptoms, to give medications so that these particular people would control their behavior. And finally, after working with them for a while, I sat down and I said, who are these people really? What's really gone on in their lives? What do they really bring to the table even though they're sick? And they had a tremendous amount of wisdom. They had had life experiences. They actually had tremendous insights and abilities that we just weren't used to focusing on. And as soon as I decided to start doing that in treatment, I saw significant improvements. In other words, Marie, I looked at the humanness of these people, and despite what was happening, could see how amazing they were. And I took that concept and used it with other clients and in my own personal life, and it's made an incredible difference.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. All right, well, let's look a little bit more closely about what you do with the Already Well program. I mean, how do you work with a person to help them?
Well, frequently, a person will come in to see me, and they will say, this is wrong or that's wrong with what I'm doing. And oftentimes, they'll find fault with themselves. They'll think they're not doing something right. They'll think they're not being a good enough parent. And what the Already Well program says is that we need to make peace with the parts of ourselves that we feel, that we criticize and feel shame about, the parts of ourselves that we're afraid of, or else we're not really able to move forward. In other words, understanding and recognizing the value that a human being has in the present moment is amazingly powerful for healing.
All right, so it kind of sounds a bit like a catch-22, though, because we're making peace with where we are because we want to get better. So
I love that you said that. No, I love that you said that. And that is one of the confusing parts of it. But when we really look at it, using, let's say, an example of being overweight. Let's say a person is 50 pounds overweight, and they say, I hate this. I can't seem to lose it. I've been trying to lose this weight for 10 years. I've spent thousands of dollars and suffered greatly, and I just can't get it off. And I say to them, that's amazing. You have gained and lost, let's say, 100 pounds, spent all this money and time, basically because you wanted to feel better. And that the real core of what you're doing is actually a good thing. It is showing you that you have the ability in lots of ways to take care of yourself. And I want to celebrate the time, the energy, the intention, the suffering that you've gone through in order to try to make yourself feel better. When a person is able to see how hard they've worked at something, when they're able to see their real motive behind what they do, they're able to appreciate it. When people can embrace the fact that they've tried so hard to lose weight, they've tried so hard to not be depressed, they've tried so hard to be better parents, when they can respect themselves and accept that about themselves, they actually make progress in moving forward.
Okay, so it sounds like you're saying that you're going to look for the things that you're doing and really appreciating the work that you've put in and appreciating your strengths. So being accepting yourself is not just giving up and being like, okay, well, I'm fat and lazy and I'm a bad parent, so whatever.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And for me, I had been a psychotherapist for years and years and was always trying to get better, always trying to improve or acquire, and never really took the time in my own life either to stop and say, what about me have I already accomplished? Do I ever give myself credit for not only the successes but the failures? For all the times that I've tried, for all the times that I have been disappointed, for all the heartache, all the things that I've wanted that I haven't been able to achieve, do I ever give myself credit for those things? And, of course, the answer was no. And when I began to do that with me and with my clients, I saw this tremendous transformation. When I would look at, let's say, someone with schizophrenia and say, that is amazing that you have been able to stay alive like this for 8 years amidst the stigma, amidst the suffering, amidst the hospitalizations, giving that person credit for the things that they've lost in their life. I look at them and I say, you're absolutely amazing. That's amazing that you can do that. And we can do it with nearly any illness or situation. We are truly incredible human beings. And the fact that we've arrived here, both you and I, Marie, this day, despite all the stuff we've done or including it, is really something to be praised.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. It's interesting that I think that this is really a symptom of our society, and especially like we have the type A perfectionistic type mm-hmm. people. And why is it, do you think, that we don't give ourselves credit?
Well, I think that we're not raised to, first of all. Our society is completely set up against it. Our society is completely moving into what's next, into what we will acquire, achieve, accomplish, overcome. And we aren't taught, even as children, to stop and appreciate what's going on right this minute with ourselves. When a child brings home a bad grade, a parent rarely will say, I really want to commend you. You got that bad grade, but I know how worried you were. Or I know how hard you tried to study for it, but it didn't work. I know what you put into it. I know how embarrassed you must have been when you got that grade. There's a lot inside of all of our experiences that's valuable that we can pull out and use in our lives.
I really like the example of the grades. It brings back a memory from childhood when I would bring my report card to my foster mother. And I was a very bright student, and school was quite easy for me. And if I didn't have a great grade in everything, I would get, first of all, I would get no credit for the good grades. And then she would get this very, like, judgmental, scornful look on her face, as if I was a bad person. Because I didn't have straight A's.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even when you mentioned being a foster child, of course, I don't know the details, but I know that even that was a difficult thing to go through. It certainly involved adjustment. It certainly involved adaptation. And she wasn't seeing any of that. And Already Well says, "You are amazing that you even did that in the first place." And it is a good example of it, because you weren't inclined then to go get better grades. I think a good point you're bringing up here is there's different motivations for us to make improvements in our lives. And the motivation you would have been referring to then maybe would have been fear, or a desire to prove that you could accomplish or measure up. And the motive behind Already Well for change is, I am absolutely amazing already. Look what I've done. My God, 150 pounds I've gained and lost, all in an effort to feel better. And how incredible that is. So I understand your example. It's perfect. You weren't inclined, were you, at that point to say, wow, I'm going to keep getting good grades and doing good things because I feel so good about myself?
No, there definitely wasn't any positive reinforcement. It was just, if anything, I probably did worse in school, because I actually didn't mind school. But when I was made to feel bad, obviously I didn't enjoy it as much. And my teachers loved me. I mean, they weren't complaining about my grades.
Of course not. So, you know what else comes to mind when you say that is, Already Well is really about us doing this to ourselves. I mean, this is really a very personal journey. When that happens to you or a small child, we internalize that as our standard. And we go along in life saying, well, I have to do this better, or I'm not good enough the way I am, or what I'm doing somehow, I'm unworthy of getting good things in my life. And Already Well has us really look at what are those messages that we give ourselves all the time about needing to improve, not being thin enough, not being young enough or beautiful enough or any of that. So it's a moment in time when we celebrate the amazing work that we've all done to get where we are in the moment.
So let's talk about, I want to ask you more about your own journey, but I'm curious to know about, we'll use the overweight person trying to lose weight as an example. So when they recognize that they have, you know, done all of this work and they've been very successful at losing the weight and then gaining it back and yada, 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 giving themselves credit and considering themselves already well, what's the next step after that?
Well, the next step is to look at how the feelings shift. You know, I would ask them, have you ever done this before? Well, no, I haven't. I would look into their life further, and we would bring out all sorts of examples of ways that they had really done a very good job of living. And in addition to, we would look at how they used food as a coping mechanism. You know, why in your history is this something that you learned? And I would show them that they learned to do this, and that it's not because they're bad people. It was a natural and normal instinct given the circumstances they were in. I would say, if you really want to lose weight, let's look at the motivation. So the already well process would be that this person would spend some time really exploring their life and in all the different ways that they've been amazing, pulling the pearls out of all the parts of their lives that they've been afraid to look at, been avoiding, and taking those pearls and saying, okay, now let's come up with a plan that's based on self-respect and good energy and see what happens.
Dr. Jordan, I'm curious with the example of the overweight, how many on average would you say people start accepting themselves as already well and then keep the weight on and just sort of accept that this is how they are, but they become happier in other areas of their life?
That's a great question. I have had people, I'm sorry, I'm avoiding my dog barking here, so I'm walking around. Most people, I will ask them, what do you want to do with this? Do you want to accept your weight just like it is? And most people will say no. They'll say, no, you know, I've been carrying this around because I haven't been able to love myself enough to let it go. But it does happen. People are able to use already well and say, you know what, I've decided I'm good enough just the way I am. So it's a personal decision. The question is, what do you want to do based in love? What is it that you want to do with your body based in the new self-respect you found?
It's interesting with the weight or whatever it is. A lot of times people will have a challenge, like they want to be more financially successful, or they want to lose weight, or they want to be married, or whatever. And so they strive and they strive and they strive and they work so hard for it because they think that that's the thing that's going to make them happy.
Exactly.
And then they finally get it and they realize that they've still got all this stuff. They still feel awful. And now it's even harder because they don't have that goal anymore.
Yes. That's right. Or you could say they don't have that chasing them anymore. I think that empowerment precedes change. It doesn't follow it. When we empower ourselves in the present moment, we are able to succeed beyond that. That's one reason that I've developed this, is because there are many philosophies that say, after you do this or that, you will feel better about yourself. After you meditate, and after you exercise, and it's true, we do feel better about ourselves, but it doesn't seem to be long-lasting. We kind of come back to this default place of, I don't deserve it, I'm not perfect enough, I can't really get happy. So I think that understanding, coming from a place of already knowing that we have tried really hard to look at the heartache behind wanting to be married and not being able to find anyone, to look at the time and energy that we've spent trying to do that, to look at the loneliness, to value that, to wrap our arms around it and say, wow, I've really spent a lot of time doing this. I'm an amazing person.
So let's say, I like that you mentioned the meditation and the exercise and how you said that empowerment comes before change. And yet sometimes, I mean, it's hard to know if we change some of our behaviors, like with cognitive behavioral therapy, that can help as well. I mean, if someone is laying in bed and they don't have the energy to even function, how are they supposed to change their attitude about themselves?
Well, I think it's simultaneous. I think it's simultaneous. It's not really one thing before the other. But we need to be aware of when we're making changes in life, when we're making changes, let's say, with finding a husband or losing weight, that we're also understanding that we're changing our relationship with ourselves at the same time. If my perpetual habit is to criticize myself, feel shame about myself, be afraid of the world, then it doesn't really matter how much of these other things I do, because I seem to come back to a default place. And I make reference to that because I have a lot of people in therapy that I see that are new that have been in therapy for a long time, because what they're trying to do is to change. They want to change this about themselves or change that. And already, well, it isn't an answer in and of itself. It's a moment in time when we say, I'm already healing. I'm already brilliant. I've already done these things. I've already overcome this and overcome that. I am going to now tackle these things I want to do in a more empowered way. And a person who's in bed will need to obviously get out of bed, and they'll do that by making physical changes. But when it's all been said and done, the bottom line is, what is the default relationship I have with myself in my mind?
Thank you. Well, we are speaking with Dr. Danae Jordan, and you can find her at alreadywell.com. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you can find me at spiritualshow.com. You can also check out some of my episodes on youtube.com/spiritualshow. And Dr. Jordan, can you tell us a little bit about what attracted you to psychology?
Oh, I love human behavior, and I love people. I love to watch what makes people do what they do, how people think differently one from the other. I love relationships, how people interact with one another. And really, quite honestly, I just think we're amazing. I don't think we give ourselves the credit that we're due. I think we're constantly working, like I had said, in order to improve or become or change or get better. And we're already, all of us, quite amazing already.
And so what are some of the challenges that you've overcome using the Already Well method?
I think that the biggest challenge for me has been overcoming self-criticism. Not that I, of course, have succeeded, but I am much better now at recognizing the part of me that tells me I'm not measuring up, that tells me I'm not doing a good enough job, that is constantly monitoring what I'm saying and doing. She's relaxed some, that part of me. The wise woman in me, the part of me that is consistent, my spirit, that knows how hard I worked already just to be alive, has more of a say-so in my life. She's coming forward more and saying, just a second, don't be so hard on yourself. You are quite amazing already. So it was that... was one of those ideas, actually, that helped me give birth to Already Well.
Can you tell us about the first time you remember recognizing this pattern and maybe this wise woman within you?
I'm not sure it was a moment, Marie, but I think after many years, I've been lecturing and training, and I am a retired ballerina, spent many, many years in the world of trying to be perfect, of trying to seek approval, nearly to the point of it killing me, I think. And slowly I began to recognize that there was never going to be a time, like you said, there was never going to be a time when I was smart enough or well enough or approved of enough or beautiful enough that the hands on the clock were going to stop and say, or a bell was going to go off and say, you've arrived. You have finally accomplished and become all that you want to be. And that I needed to do that for myself. I couldn't go on like I was going. I needed to stop myself and ring the bell, so to speak, and say, you know what? Look at your life. Look at who you are. Look at what you've done. Even look at the things that you don't like about yourself. Look at how those developed. Give yourself credit for every single accomplishment, for every single failure, for everything that you've done in your life, because it's all been done for a reason, and there's value in all of it. And once I started doing that, my life changed significantly.
So let's talk about how your life changed. What did it look like then versus now?
Well, you mentioned authentic. I have the ability now to be much more authentic than I was in the past. I'm doing a play in February in Hollywood. It's a one-woman show where I actually bring to life the voices in my head, so to speak, that most people don't want other people to see. I bring the voice of vanity. I bring the voice of anger. I bring the voice of my critic alive, and for the whole world to see, because basically I think we're all the same. And Already Well has given me a vehicle to say, now just a minute, I don't need to be perfect. I'm a sum total of a life that I have done my very best to live. So I'm calmer. I have the ability now to say more of the way that I feel when I feel it. I have a sense of, I think I have more of a sense of self-worth as a result of it.
Beautiful. I'm curious about, you mentioned when I asked you about why you got into psychology and I could hear the energy in your voice change. You were like, well, I love people and relationships and watching how people are. And so I'm curious how the relationship with your patients and clients has changed. What does the connection feel like now?
The connection also feels more authentic. I don't feel like I need to have all of the answers. I feel like I can look at my patients much more easily and say, I'm not sure. Let's talk about that. I don't know what the answer is. I've also noticed, because I direct a program at work, that it's much easier for me to say I'm sorry. Because if I can face the things about me I don't like with love and compassion, I can say I'm sorry. I don't avoid them. I don't defend myself like I used to. My defenses are a lot lower. I'm more comfortable in my own skin now. And I see us, I'm constantly saying this at work and with Already Well, we are all the same. All of us want to feel safe, valuable, and connected in this world. We're all walking around in bodies, and we're all doing it a different way. But we all have an equal amount of value, and we all care very much about the way that we're living.
I'm curious, Dr. Jordan, You mentioned being more comfortable in your own skin. And that seems to be something that comes with age and maturity. I was thinking about this last night about how teenagers, I think it starts around age 10, where we start to get really self-conscious and really worried about what everyone else thinks. People are much more embarrassing as we get into our teen years. And I'm just curious if you think or if you've had any experience with this, is there any way to move through that stage of development more quickly or prevent it? I mean, through accepting ourselves more, one would think that we're not going to worry so much about what others think. And at the same time, isn't that a normal phase of development?
I think it is. I definitely think it is. I think what is possible, though, that we don't focus on maybe enough is for teenagers to understand about other people, too, that we all are the same. I actually work with teenagers now in my present position, and they're quite amazing because if we sit down together in a more quiet, maybe less intimidating environment than the classroom, children do have the ability to say, now I understand why so-and-so does what they do. The second gift of accepting ourselves, I think, is accepting other people and explaining to teenagers, this is why people are doing what they're doing. There aren't bad people. There aren't good people. I mean, certainly we need to teach them about danger. I don't mean that. But sitting down and saying, do you know how a bully actually feels inside? Do you know that a bully feels like they're less than other people, not more than? Do you know when we're working with kids, if I teach them that it's okay to make a mistake? Did you know that it's all right to not know things? It's all right to be able to say, I don't know, or I made a mistake, or I'm afraid of this or that. There are actually some really good books out for teenagers on understanding their own behavior and the behavior of other people. But compassion is huge. I think compassion is a huge component of already well and of this whole process. Compassion for myself, compassion for others, regardless and including everything.
So if there were one or two exercises that we could take, let's maybe start with self-compassion. Is there something that you could walk us through?
What I like to do in the beginning is simply ask people to make a list of the things about their life that they hate or the things about themselves, and to look at each one and say, and to look at it more lovingly, to say, why is it that you think you do that? Isn't that for a perfectly reasonable human reason? Let's say being late. What is it about being late? Well, I hate being late. It makes me feel bad about myself. Okay, but what is it? What's going on with being late? Well, I don't feel like I have enough time to myself. All right, so being late may be the way that you're trying to get some extra time for yourself. Yeah. Okay. Do you think that deserves a lot of criticism? No. Do you understand it a little better? Yes. Do you wish you did it in a different way? Yeah. I want to do it in a way that works. Okay. So let's talk about how you're going to give yourself a little more time in a way that works. So listing the things about you, the things you don't like in your life, and saying, Why is this happening? What is it that I need to do in a more loving way to take care of this problem? Not how do I need to punish myself, how do I need to discipline myself, how do I need to stop eating sugar, Now, what do you need to do that's more loving and respectful?
Thank you for that, Dr. Jordan. And I'm curious about the concept of success. In our society, you know, more, we always need more. We want to get higher. We want to achieve more monetary success. And you were talking in your media reel. I really found that interesting, the whole societal expectation of success. So can we talk about that and what it does to us?
Well, it kills us is what it does. Most of us subscribe to a set of standards that are terminally impossible to achieve. Terminally impossible. I mean, it's awful. If there is a underlying standard which says that no matter what I do, it's not going to be enough, that is a recipe for stroke, heart attack, cancer, rage. I mean, it's just incredible. If we subscribe to the standards set up for us by the society around us, we will inevitably be sick in some sort of a way. The definition of success must be personal contentment. I'll use an example of the homeless, let's say. I have worked for years on a homeless team where people go out and assume that everybody wants to have their own home and a good job and a car to drive, let's say. And these are standards that we set up, and we go out and make assumptions on other people, when in fact there are some people in life that are content with a lot less than what the average person is. And so I listen to, when I'm working with my clients, I say, what would make you feel content? What is your level of contentment? Of course, it's got nothing to do with income or anything else. And that's what I would measure success with. And if a person is a multimillionaire and has everything that we can imagine, and they aren't content, then it's time for them to really do an inventory of what they're doing in their life, really doing an inventory on their attitudes. Success is a degree of contentment that we can only define for ourselves.
Dr. Jordan, can I ask you to speak up a bit?
Certainly.
Great, thank you.
Content is a degree of contentment. I mean, success is a degree of contentment that only can be measured for each one of us personally. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you talk about contentment and you mention the multimillionaires, because a friend of mine actually just recently, just a couple weeks ago, ended his life. And
oh, my God.
I never would have expected that he would do that, because he had everything. I mean, he seemed like he was very successful. He seemed quite happy and content. And so it's really interesting how he had everything that someone would use to define success. And yet, obviously, there was something missing.
Obviously.
And yet there are people who live on the streets in poverty, and they may not, I mean, some may be content, others may not be, and yet they face each day.
They face each day. And some of them are, like you said, and some aren't. So there was something inside of him, I would venture a guess, that he felt shame about, was afraid of, or critical of himself, felt remorse, and was not able to meet it, make peace with it, and free himself from it.
Mm-hmm.
It was something holding him hostage inside. And, of course, I would not even venture a guess what it would be.
Yeah, I've been trying, and I have some theories. But and again, it is the theory that I've come up with is there was shame, unfortunately. But I mean, the thing is that that's just when we feel shame. Really, where is that coming from? For the most part, it's coming from the expectations that we place on ourselves, or the expectations that were placed on ourselves when we were kids.
Right. That's right. And that's why I think it's so important we bring it to the table. Like Ram Dass said, we open the door and invite it in for tea. And we sit down with all the demons and the creatures, and we sit down and we say, would you like some tea? So tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. And Marie, we love ourselves. Well, that's the only way that we can liberate ourselves is loving those parts of ourselves that we find unlovable. Mm. Through understanding and compassion. Like you said, there's nothing that we develop, no behavior, no thoughts, no feelings do we develop unless there is a reason to do it. There's some reason that we develop the way that we do. And usually, of course, it's behind survival. If I develop a behavior, it's to cope with my life, to cope with living, to protect myself from what I'm afraid of in the world.
Interesting. Yeah, it's the things that we come up with that seem to make sense. I mean, when we form a belief, like you said, there's a reason, and it makes sense at the time, and yet we keep repeating these patterns far beyond the time that it makes sense or that it's healthy for us.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I have found, too, that people don't usually come to the already well process or really to any sort of life exploration until somehow we've hit bottom. Somehow we say to ourselves, you know what, I'm doing is not working. Or I've done this over and over and over again a million times, and I'm just getting the same results. I don't think it's something that we just come up with if we're going along and relatively content. And certainly being older is helpful with that, too.
I'm curious, how much of the population do you think is actually content, whether or not they're in therapy?
Very little. Very little. I'm always so encouraged with shows like yours and the wonderful work that people are doing, because it really is giving us a way to actually find contentment. I think very few, and I think that the disease, both mentally and physically, that we see in our society is absolute proof of that.
So what do you think the difference is if the majority of us are relatively uncontent and judging ourselves constantly? What's the difference between the people who seek out help and the people who just keep on going as things are?
Well, I think we go on as things are until we can't anymore. And I think that, I mean, for some people, of course, they just die discontent. But for many people, something happens in life that's a wake-up call. And we say, oh my goodness, I can't keep going on like this. Something has to change. Mm. That's the good news about discontent. I think that's the flip side of life is it usually catches up to us if we're not taking good care of ourselves.
Hmm. So it sounds like people can have a low level of discontent and that it's just sort of there bubbling under the surface, but until it gets really bad, people don't really try and do anything about it.
I think that's true. I love that you said that because most people I know, it's bubbling there. And some of us are more aware of it than others. Some of us feel more uncomfortable with it than others. But there's lots of really interesting alternatives to self-care. You know, there's lots of interesting anesthesia we can use in life. We can shop, we can drink, we can smoke, we can eat, we can acquire, we can glamorize, we can, I mean, there's so many things that we can do to avoid that low level of discontent. And, you know, many people just do it, of course, until they die. But I think that if they're really being honest, you know, in the quiet and still moments of the night, so to speak, they will say, yes, I'm not really feeling fulfilled. Mm. And that's what spirituality is to me. It's the missing piece. It is the wise woman. It is the wise man. It is the part of us that knows better how we should be living, what we should be doing, and how we should be caring for ourselves.
Oh, it's so interesting you bring up spirituality, and because I was thinking about all the distractions that we have, and I'm just picturing kids now. I know when I was a kid, you know, we would go to church on Sundays and get a bunch of guilt trip, and it was really boring, and I just sort of sit there, and there was no inspiration or spiritual fulfillment from a kid's point of view. And nowadays, kids are so much more busy. Like, I remember when I was a kid, which was before the internet, there were times when I was bored. And I had to find ways to occupy myself. But now kids are so overscheduled. And even when they have free time, they're watching TV, they're on the internet. I mean, how is this latest generation ever supposed to tune into the fact that they don't feel fulfilled if they're constantly occupied?
That's a really good question. And, you know, I don't know the answer. But I do see the result of it. And I have children as young as 7 years old in treatment for stress, and it breaks my heart. 7 years old for stress from homework and school, playing sports, playing this and that and winning. I think that, you know, certainly children are more busy today, but it's really the attitude the parents take with all of this busyness that's so important. There needs to be an attitude of, you did your best, I congratulate you, allowing for rest, allowing for childishness, allowing for a grade that isn't just an A. Our children become what they produce rather than who they really are. Mm. I think giving children an artistic alternative is really valuable, and not something that's perfectly prescribed, but something that allows them to express themselves in a natural sort of way. But it is really a concern for me. I have a 14-year-old that I'm working with right now who has a major eating disorder and she's just about ready to go to the hospital with her anxiety. Mm. And it's a 95% around school and her social life. I mean, it's just incredible. What that kid has to bring home for schoolwork is unbelievable to me. It looks like college work.
Mm-hmm. Another question came up for me. Because our society is so accomplishment-focused, even if we're working with what would make us content, we're social, we're a social species. We need mm-hmm. each other.
Right.
Right? So right. At what point do you put contentment over, I mean, aren't we almost obligated to achieve a certain level of success just so that we can be in society and have friends and...
Yes, I think that what it requires is an integration. I call it my animal and my angel and integration. I personally really like to shop for shoes, and I want to be able to integrate my shoe self with my wise woman, and that it's not an either-or thing like you're saying. It's not. My physical self, my social self, my self that went and got some Botox injections the other day, that part of me is integrated. She needs to integrate with the wise woman and spiritual part of me. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I am a social creature. I want to do social things. I want to have a nice car and nice possessions, but all of that needs to be balanced with my spirit at the same time. I don't believe that neither in this lifetime is more sacred than the other. My ego and my body is definitely a part of my life here, and my spirit is too. This is an integration, a coming together of all of the parts of me, and knowing that all of it is okay, knowing that all of the parts of me are doing the best possible job they can, being proud of that, finding energy from it, and moving forward.
What about the days when you're not doing the best?
That's okay, I say. Okay, not doing so well. I say, it's okay to not do so well some days. I'm a human being. I'm a whole human being. I have hormones, and I have moods, and I have attitudes that don't work for me. I have a lot of things going on. And the secret to feeling better is to say it's okay to feel bad, which kind of gets back to your first question, where it sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. I really don't think it is. Giving myself permission to just be a human being, to not be feeling great all the time, I instantly feel better.
But what's the difference then between someone who can show like self-compassion, it sounds like is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between someone who does that and someone who is just like, well, I don't care if you think I'm a jerk because that's your problem and I'm just going to continue being mean or stealing or hitting people and they just never try to do anything different?
Well, I think that when I hear those kind of things, it sounds like they're accepting themselves for who they are, but they're really not. You know, underneath there's a real sense of self-loathing and lots of things they don't want to look at, a lot of pain and suffering. So I hear what you're saying. The attitudes sound the same, but really they're the opposite. Accepting myself, knowing that I would like to be better, is different than giving myself excuses or not taking responsibility for my life. There's a difference.
Mm.
When I accept myself for who I am with a full intention of growing and changing and expanding, that's taking responsibility for myself. When I say I don't care about anybody else, I just want to be like I am, I'm fine, I'm not really taking responsibility for my evolution. They're actually opposite.
Hmm. But they can seem so similar, and sometimes
they can,
people,
yes.
Sometimes people almost, it almost sounds, when you speak with people, because there's a certain developmental or spiritual path that we all go through, and sometimes I hear people who are on a spiritual path, but they have that attitude of, well, if you have a problem with anything I say, it's your problem.
Right.
And I mean, of course, there is a shred of truth in that.
Right.
But there's not the, it's completely not at all taking responsibility.
Yes. Yes. I mean, obviously, when you and I or any two of us talk about somebody else, you know, we are making some kind of a judgment, which is absolutely normal.
Mm-hmm.
But with already well, this is a personal thing where I would say to that person, are you content? And they would say, I am, and I am, and I don't care what other people think. Well, to be honest with you, I would say, well, where's the connection piece there? There's something going on. There's some defensiveness in that. And when I'm defensive, I'm protecting something. When I'm protecting something, I feel unsafe. So you know, it would take some further exploration, but that's a hard thing to get around when it's somebody else's personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, that's fine, unless they're my patient, you know. But if it's just a person in the universe, I say, you know, I have feelings about that. I have an opinion about that, but certainly there's nothing I'm going to do to change that. And they will, you know, that they will reach a point of discomfort with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a clear answer to your question? Because that's a tricky question.
No, I think so. I mean, I like what you said. It's true. You mentioned any time we're talking about someone else, we are forming a judgment. I mean, our opinion is a form of judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
And yet, I mean, I totally see that about other people. And I also notice that we do it to ourselves, too. I mean, we're judging everything constantly.
Constantly. Yes. And assessing, it's a fine line, but assessing to me is different than judging. And that's a fine line and something there's no finite way to measure that. But assessment is a little looser for me. It's a little more like, you know, I need to watch where I'm driving, so to speak. I need to kind of know where I am in the universe. I want to assess another person and say, well, where are they coming from? I mean, they're an animal. They're in the kingdom with me. Are they dangerous? Are they approachable? Who are they? It's perfectly natural. And when I really watch or when I really notice I'm judgmental is when I think that I'm better.
Hmm.
And not different, but better. And when I feel better than other people, I have some self assessment to do.
Hmm. It sounds like when we think that we're better, it's almost a way of disconnecting ourselves from others, and I imagine that's a way of protecting ourselves as well.
That's funny you said that. I completely agree, and that kind of reminds me of the question you just asked me about the person that says, and I don't care what people think. First of all, I will say that that's absolutely not true, because as human animals, we are pack animals. This is just an interesting point. We are pack animals, and we are born and developed to care what other people think of us. Because if we don't watch what other people think of us, we won't keep ourselves inside the pack and we won't stay safe. We are not lone creatures. So we all naturally and are supposed to care about what other people think of us. But you and I and everybody else knows when that goes too far.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, it has been fascinating talking with you. Thank you so much, Dr. Jordan. Just before we close, I'm just wondering if there's anything that you would like to leave listeners with today.
I would like to leave you with the fact that you and the big you and me have worked our tails off to get where we are. We have lived through millions of experiences, good and bad, heartache, failures and successes. We have tried our best to do so many things. We have missed the mark in many ways, but in this society and in this present moment, for us just to have made it this far in this life is quite amazing, and that we're all magnificent.
Mm. Well, that sounds like a perfect way to wrap up the show. Thank you so much, Dr. Jordan. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Danae Jordan, and you can find her at alreadywell.com. Thank you so much for joining us today. It has been such a pleasure serving you, and feel free to check out my website, spiritualshow.com, as well as Dr. Jordan's alreadywell.com. And I just want to send you lots and lots of love for a wonderful week. Be well. I love you so much. And remember to love yourself. Namaste. And coming up next here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Horrific. So woo, stick around for that. You already missed Namaste. I'll say it again though. Namaste.
Bam!
Peanut butter and jam!
What the f*** are you doing, Phil?
Right now it's time to...
Peanut butter.
Damn.
First you dig peanuts and you dig them. You dig them. Then you crush them. You crush them. Then you spread them. You spread them. Peanut butter.
Damn.
Peanut butter.
If you're looking for the best in local music and local food, it's got to be Peanut Butter and Jams with your host Brenda and Jordy, alternating Thursdays 6 to 7:30. Check it out.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
The Capital One Just for Laughs comedy tour returns with a stellar lineup of headliners, starring stand-up writer and person Dimitri Martin.
I'm standing right behind you.
Funny as Hell host John Doerr, Canadian Comedy Award winner Levi McDougall, and podcast superstar Todd Glass. The Capital One Just for Laughs comedy tour at the Orpheum on November 14th. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster. For details, check Metro News or go to hahaha.com/comedy tour.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing